Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today for the most scintillating hour in finance radio. And you know what? Today, I mean it every week. We don't want to make this boring. We want to make it as fun as possible, informative, educational, but also try to make it fun. I listen to, and this is no knock. And hopefully when I say this, you're not sitting there going, well, Zach, we consider you one of those guys. But, some of this other finance radio can be really laborious to listen to. It's like inviting people over to watch you pressure wash your driveway. You know, it's not a lot of fun. Yeah, it's something, right? But it's not exactly enjoyable to listen to. So hopefully that's not the case with this show. Today we do have a great show planned for you. We're going to do a mix again. We've got a great interview coming up with an old friend of the show, Brent Johnson of Santiago Gold Fund and money manager of his own right and really bright guy. Going to talk about a lot of things that are going on in the world and focusing more strictly on some interesting things that have been happening just in the last 2 weeks. And as always, we want to look at these things without a jaundiced eye. And I can't tell you how many times in my career, finance is like anything else in life, right? Confirmation bias plays a big role, meaning if you're looking for something in particular, you're going to find it, right? You're going to, regardless of what your outlook is, you're going to be able to, find evidence or find things that back that point of view up. It doesn't make it right. So what we want to try to do, as always, is we want to step back and analyze things for what they are. As I've said 100% of the time, as I've said on this show many times, at 100% of the time of this job, your job is to get it right. It's not to have really cool opinions and make them sound cute. That's not the gig. The gig is to be right, to protect capital, to make clients capital. And there are big caveats that come with that, one of which is performance. We've had a lot of these conversations with our clients and prospective clients recently. A lot of confusion about performance over there. So performance is one thing we want to go over before we get to the interview. And if you're just joining us, the interview is going to start probably about two-thirds of the way through the show. We'll air the first part of it. Then if you want to hear the remainder of it, and we'll include these directions, but at the end of the show. But you'll be able to go to our podcast page. You'll be able to go to, Northwest, mynorthwest.com, find our podcast. You can Google Know Your Risk Radio. It'll take you to the Stitcher website or Google Know Your Risk Radio Stitcher. That's another podcast site that we're on. It's pretty easy to find it. And then you can subscribe to the podcast page so you get an alert or an email every single time a new show comes on. So that's that. Like I said, we'll remind you of that process toward the end of the episode as well. But so before we get to the interview, though, and it's one that I'm excited. It's going to be a little wonkish. It's going to be a little bit in the weeds, but I think it's very important. A lot of the things that we're going to go over, and hopefully leading up to the interview in the market update and the couple segments I've got planned prior to the interview, we'll lay out the groundwork so you don't feel you're going into it, completely out over your skis. So anyway, let's get into the market update. So really interesting stuff. Look, I think we had Tobias Carlyle on the show for an interview almost a month ago now. And one of the things that he and I were discussing, that we were seeing signs of life in value-type stocks. We're always talking about value, right? And all of you that have been listening to the show know that value has been, it's the longest period of time of underperformance when we compare value stocks to growth stocks. So, you know, needless to say, guys like us or firms like us that are focused on value, you know, we feel like we've found some good value. We feel like we've found some good stuff out there, but that hasn't been what's working. Then all of a sudden, and I'd be lying to you if I told you that I knew the reason why. All of a sudden, about a month ago, we started to see some odd things. First of all, some of the high flyers that, and truthfully, this has been happening for the last really year and a half, 2 years. And I think if you've been listening to the show for a long time, you know what I'm talking about. You know, we basically not forecasted, but we started warning people about Boeing stock because we thought it'd run too high, too fast, too hot. And that ended up being right before Boeing took a big dive. Now, it's clawed a lot of that back. I think it's clawed it back for all the wrong reasons. I think people are buying it just because it's down. I still don't think there's enough technical analysis out there. More and more news articles continue to leak out about Boeing and the problems it's got internally and how management is too focused. And then, look, we said this all. And I'm not going to talk about Boeing because we got it right. Okay, what I want to use it as is an example of what can go wrong and why looking at things in a fundamental view is so important, okay? Because I get plenty wrong too. Everybody, if you do this industry, if you do this business long enough, you're going to get plenty wrong. There is nobody out there that's an oracle. Hopefully you don't think of me that way. But the goal here is to shed insight and light on how the industry works, how investments work, how we should approach it in a disciplined manner. And hopefully we do a good job of that. So anyway, getting back to the Boeing discussion. There, you know, it's the old adage, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's probably a duck, right? Quacks like a duck. I guess ducks don't really talk. Maybe, you know, if you're Dr. Doolittle or something, that'd be an interesting power to have, right? Be able to talk to animals. I don't know if we'd want to hear what they had to say. Anyway, got to stay on track here. But when you do the interviews that we have and you do the in-depth research with Boeing that we have and you see these cost-cutting measures that, and again, you've confirmed it, right? You can't get all this from the financials. But you sit there and you start painting the picture, a mural of a company that is really just chasing financial results, that is doing everything they can to gin up their stock price. What you inherently also know is that they are not singularly and impassionedly or in an impassioned way, impassionedly. I think I just coined a new word there, Darren. In an impassioned way and in an intense, you know, unforgiving manner, they're not pursuing what is best for the business. Those are two different things. And they'll say, well, we are attempting to maximize shareholder value. Well, yeah, and I'm sure that that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that 90% of your compensation is based on stocks, right? Stock compensation. I'm sure that doesn't cloud your view at all, right? Well, of course it does, because these CEOs, they're people just like you and I. And if 80% or 90% of their compensation is based on the performance of the underlying stock, don't be surprised if they sacrifice some of the long-term viability or health of the business for short-term stock gain. Just don't let it shock you, right? Newsflash. Rich CEOs and Wall Street types can be greedy, okay? But more importantly, when I hear things over and over and over, and I'm talking from all different parts of a company about a stock price, $800, that's what we're focused on, $800 a share. That's confirmation to what I'm seeing now on the cost-cutting side. And when you see that, look, I don't know the top. The timing of our call on Boeing was lucky. Nobody can time these things. You never know when reality is going to strike. But what's the point? This this is going to feed right into our conversation about performance. Everybody gets too caught up with short-term performance over periods of time. I don't know, and I don't have an explanation for you, okay? And I don't know what it is, but this short-term focus on performance is the most pervasive right now than I have ever seen at any time in my career. And that's not, you know, that's not me crying over spilt milk either. We haven't been knocking the cover off the ball, but the portfolios together have been doing great, all the different takes. Our actively managed portfolio has lagged this year just because we're concentrated in value and things like that. We've had some good winners, hasn't made as much as the market, but now flip over last year and we beat the market handily. We were up slightly. Market was down 6%, 5.5%, something like that. So it goes back and forth. It's not just spilt milk. Like I said, we haven't blown it out of the water. You know, it's never good enough from my perspective. But like I said, it's not spilt milk. The focus on short-term returns is just crazy. Listen, you guys, in retirement, and I know this isn't market update stuff, but I want you to remember something. In retirement, the goal is to finance your retirement. You're not a hedge fund. Your goal shouldn't be to outperform the S&P every year. Your goal should be to accomplish your retirement goals. And if you do that in a disciplined approach, the opportunities will present themselves. And one of the biggest ways, we've been talking about this recently with prospective clients, and this week we were dealing with a prospective client that's coming aboard right now, but has an abnormally large portfolio, you know, multi millions of dollars. And one of the things that we were discussing with him is, look, what do you need to do? Yeah, we need to grow your money. But a lot of that, guys, is just portfolio construction. If we build it the right way, you're going to make money over time. It's not a big deal. The risk management that we're always hammering on, that's the key. Okay, now I'm already getting too far into it. So I got to stick to the market update. But that's kind of a prelude to what we're going to talk about on the performance side. All right, because all too often we're focused on what mutual fund are we in, what stocks do we have, and no one's looking at the actual construction of the portfolio itself and the differences in the way that we construct a portfolio. And I'll lay this out for you. Over a 10-year period of time, basically the same investments, if we use essentially the same investments and we just structured a portfolio differently, it can make a 30 to 50% difference in the total size of a portfolio over a 10-year period of time. This isn't a small thing. Then, of course, if we get the call, you know, if the things that we're in or the things that we're overweight or the stocks that we're picking, and we do both, right? Mutual funds, less of those because of the underlying fees. They tend to be fee factories. But we've got, you know, exchange-traded fund portfolios, individual stock portfolios that less of our clients have because, you know, it's considered more high risk with individual stocks. But, you know, there's several different approaches that we use. And, you know, just general market growth over time will give you the returns that you need. The key is the risk management aspect. The key is to make sure that we don't have a disruptive event, right? Something that throws off the course of our retirement. So we'll get into that in the next segment. Getting back to the market update, and I don't want to give it away, but some very interesting things happened. So we talked already about this rotation into value. Yes, that's a big deal. We haven't seen it rocket it off. You know, it's not like it's blowing it out of the water right now. But just the money flows, just the money coming out of some of these big hot names and some of these big hot names like Boeing, like we were talking about. Boeing was. I mean, it's bounced back a little bit now. But, you know, the Rokus of the world, the Shopify's of the world, some of these big momentum plays that everybody's been on are getting smacked. And some of the value plays that we've been watching for a really long time are actually catching a bid, which means that we're seeing money come back into that. That's a change. That's interesting. Now I think what's even more interesting is that that happens to be corresponding with some very odd things happening in markets in general, which is, and again, we're going to get into, this is kind of the wonkish part that I was warning you about that we're going to get into with Brett Johnson. And that is, we have seen funding issues in the repo market. Okay. And we'll get into what that is, but basically we're seeing evidence and interesting evidence. I think it's too early to conclude what this is, but we're seeing evidence of financial stress in the banking sector. And one of the ways we're seeing that, or the primary way we're seeing that, is, like I was saying, in the repo market, where banks are lending against other banks' assets. So let's say a bank wants some cash to make a loan or whatever, and they don't have the cash on hand, but they got a pile of U.S. treasuries, okay? They will actually get a loan from another bank for the cash and use those treasuries as collateral rather than having to sell them and purchase them back and do all that kind of stuff. Right, it's think of it as like it's almost like a margin loan, right? A bank's way of taking on margin, and they're leaning current assets that they own. Okay, that's called the repo market, or the overnight lending rate. But anyway, the overnight lending rate has soared, and if you've noticed news in the financial media, you've probably seen the Fed, you know, the Fed's losing rate or losing control of the interest rate. There was a headline on CNBC. The Fed's losing control of the interest rate that they completely control. They're losing control of the rate that they supposedly control, right? What they're talking about is the repo rate. They're talking about the interbank lending rate or the overnight lending rate from one bank to another. And that's significant. And I want to get into this with Brett Johnson because this is a very wonkish issue, but it points to stress. It points to there being a shortage of collateral for whatever reason. It also points to banks thinking that there is excess risk loaning other banks money. That could potentially be a problem. Again, not Chicken Little's, not the sky is falling, but these are the kind of things that we keep an eye on. And the reason we want to keep an eye on these things is because this is how issues start, right? They typically start fairly small and then they metastasize out, okay? And when you consider record valuations, record run of this bull market, record valuations in not just stocks, bonds, real estate, asset classes, pretty much across the board, you know, again, you've heard me say it on the show, I'm going to say it 100 times more, right? Our job as risk managers, as fiduciaries, as stewards of our clients' money, is not just to place it where we think it will get the greatest return, but it's also to avoid these massive issues or these catastrophic drops. So I don't want you sitting there thinking that all we're doing is looking at this wonkish stuff and digging through banks' balance sheets. We're not. But again, when you have valuations this high, when you have corporate earnings at all-time highs, when you've got all this stuff, right, that looks very toppy and has for quite some time, just seems like the most prudent thing to keep an eye out on potential problems. So we'll go over that with Brent Johnson here pretty quick. But that's, look, you're not going to hear about it on Stuart Varney. You're not going to hear about it because this is wonkish stuff. But it's things, like I said, it's things that we need to pay attention to. And I think it's a value that is a firm that we deliver to our clients. We're not just slapping you in a portfolio full of mutual funds and bonds and telling you just to ride it out. That's not good enough. And I'll be fully transparent. One of the reasons we're not doing that is because my pay is absolutely linked to the performance of our clients' accounts. Okay, so I don't get paid for buying and selling stocks. I get paid for the performance of your account. So when I'm telling a client I'm concerned, we want to de-risk the portfolio, our clients listen. They also know that it doesn't cost them commissions, right? They're not paying big trade commissions every time we move in now. That's not how I get paid. I can't get paid that way. I get paid solely on the performance of your account, hence being a fiduciary, right? And I, you know, as a fiduciary, obviously I'm biased, but I would suggest that, you know, it's hard for me to recommend anybody going to anything other than a fiduciary just because you've got conflicts of interest. Not even, you know, not on purpose, just the nature of the game. If I'm incentivized to buy and sell you stock, that's what I'm going to do. But if I'm incentivized to get you the best performance possible, what do you think I'm going to be focused on? And what do we talk about all the time, right? The name of the radio show, Know Your Risk Radio. What is one of the easiest ways to improve long-term performance? It's preventing the catastrophic drop. So that's always going to be something we're focused on. Getting back into it, we've seen a rebound in rates. I don't think we're personally out of the woods. I think this is just kind of a relief rally for rates. U.S. 10-year got as low as like 1.4. It's popped to 1.7. And I think what everybody's doing is looking at the growth scare. We've had some bad growth numbers out. Again, here in the United States, it's better than other places, but it still is decelerating. And I think everybody's just assuming this is going to be like all the other growth scares that we've had over the last 10 years, that it's going to be over faster than it started, and now it's probably just a buying opportunity. And look, here's the deal. Could be right. Could be right. you know, it's entirely possible. But when we consider again the length of this market, when we consider again the record valuations across the board, you know, I heard interesting deal. There was a conference going on. I'm forgetting the name of it. It might have been the Seeking Alpha conference, but it doesn't sound right. Anyway, famed money manager Leon Cooperman, Omega Advisors is the name of his firm, hedge fund. Brilliant value investor, great track record. I've got nothing but respect for the guy. But he's been saying something over the past couple years, and he said it again this week, and I could not disagree with him more, saying that he believes that the market is in a range of fair value. And I've heard a lot of people saying this. Same song you're going to hear Jim Cramer singing all the time and all these other. Look, if you are looking only, and we've talked about this a million times, if you are looking only at PE ratios, price to earning ratios on the market, yeah, they don't look that bad. I mean, the long-term average is 16 over the last, you know, what is it, 70 years or something like that. And right now we're at like 22, 23. That's not nuts. We've seen crazier valuations in the tech bubble before, you know, but I do think it's important to point out that that is 40 some percent above the long-term average. So that is certainly elevated. But it's all the other valuation metrics we look at, right? GDP to market capitalization, the Warren Buffett metric, all-time high, never been higher. EBITDA versus enterprise value, right? Why do we like enterprise value? Because it includes the debt on the corporate balance sheets. When corporate balance sheets are at a record high level of debt like they are now, we think that's probably something that you should consider when you're valuing a stock. EBITDA is just earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It's free cash flow, essentially. Enterprise value to EBITDA is at a record high. Right? Price to sales. So the price of a stock compared to a company's revenue, record highs. All these different other metrics are maxed out, and everybody keeps pointing to the one that is still 40% above average, but it's not the highest on record. And they're like, oh, we think we're in a range of fair value. Okay. I mean, empirically, you're wrong. You may prove to be right. That's entirely possible. Right? Maybe this market's going to get more overvalued than the tech bubble. I don't know. But we have a saying at the office, we don't dance unless we hear music. Okay? Going out there and buying things and not paying attention to the underlying value or subscribing to some temporary and ethereal definition of what value is based on relative valuations, that's how you get run over. Does that mean you don't want to own any stocks? No, I'm not saying that. But you, when no one cares about value, that's when you need to. Okay? And then consequently, when everybody cares about value and that's all they're focused on, that's probably when you want to go hunting for stocks that maybe don't fit the valuation metrics, that have better growth potential and things like that. It's the old Buffett adage. We all talk about it all the time, but it's much harder to do in practice, which is we want to buy the things that nobody wants and we want to sell them when everybody wants them, right? That's investing. It's investing. You want to buy real estate in 2009. You want to sell it in the last 16 months, right? Stocks are no different. Now, are we trying to time things and get in and out? No, I'm not saying that. Never have, right? We talk about that all the time. No market timing. That's not what we're talking about. But if you don't have an active manager that is managing your risk exposure and alternating or, you know, and configuring your portfolio, taking valuations into consideration, you know, I don't know what you're paying them for. I mean, that's the whole point. It's to get you results that you that are better than what you'd otherwise get on your own or with somebody else. See, look at how easy that is for me to derail on something there. Just go off the rail. Anyway, I get passionate about this. Anyway, gold is not. It's just hanging in there. It kind of really hasn't done a whole lot. Kind of strange. Actually pulled back on our gold exposure a little bit about 2 weeks ago, and that seemed like a good move at this point. Just going to make it, prove it, right? We're not blind followers of any type of asset. Still want to have that gold exposure, though, just as a security blanket. Nothing crazy. We're not talking about 40% of your portfolio in gold. We're not talking about you taking delivery of a pallet full of gold and digging, burying it in your backyard. But and here's the funny thing about gold. It's an interesting topic because whenever you bring it up, you know that a certain amount of people that hear you bring it up are going to immediately write you off. Hey, look, that's fine. There's so much misinformation about gold. People are like, oh, yeah, gold's done so horrible. Stocks are the only way to go. I was having this exchange with a guy on Twitter the other day. He goes, you know, believe it or not, had you invested $1,000 in the stock market in January 1 of 2000, your $10,000 would now be worth, what he said, was it like $32,000? Wow, isn't that crazy, right? Sounds amazing. And I responded back to him and I said, well, okay. But your $10,000 would be worth more had you invested in U.S. government treasuries over the same period of time, right? What did I do there? I entered context. That's something that we need to think about. It drives me nuts. This gets right into our dirtiest word in investing. It drives me nuts anytime someone categorically says, this is good, this is bad. And you go, whoa, hold on. If I just show you this performance, boy, oh, that's pretty amazing. And what is that really, right? Your money goes from $10,000 to $32,000 over nearly 20-year period of time. You're looking at something like a, what is that? Is it like a 5.5% annual rate of return or something? It's not that impressive. Right? Everything is relative. We got to put context onto things. Oil, another big one, and we're going to talk about this with Brent Johnson, of course, coming up in the interview. But oil, a lot of interesting things going over there in Saudi Arabia. I'm going to talk about that a little bit in the next segment before we start the interview. But, you know, this whole Saudi Arabia situation is just nuts. I don't want to, we'll talk about it more in the next segment. I don't want to blow my top on this one right now, but very odd one. And honestly, I'm not going to shed a whole lot of light on it because I don't know what to think. There's arguments on both sides of this. It's just a very, very bizarre situation. And I'll lay out exactly what I mean. You got the people that are what I refer to as the war hawks that are always looking to go to war with somebody, saying, oh, we got to interfere with Iran. They're attacking Saudi Arabia. Hold on, not so fast. Let's take a look at this. And let's try to put the pieces together and really understand what's going on. So the things that we want to keep watching, guys, look, I continue to tell our clients and all of our prospective clients that, you know, we need to focus on valuations, obviously. We also need to be focused on the U.S. dollar. Mainly because of that funding stress that we're seeing there in banks and things like that. The U.S. dollar rises significantly. That creates a problem, believe it or not. So President Trump is talking about this on a regular basis. Want to keep an eye on the price of gold, see if gold's got some more upward momentum here. And that's about it. But the big stuff that's happened, Saudi Arabia and the funding issues in the bank, that's really what the market update should be about. And we're just holding that off because we're going to talk to Brent about that coming up. But anyway, we got to take a quick break. But we talked about what a fiduciary was. OK, we talked about paying attention to the drama. We talked about paying attention to all the things that are going on in markets and how we need to increase risk exposure when assets are cheap and decrease risk exposure when assets are expensive. If that's not part of your plan, if that makes sense to you, right, it should, common sense, right? Parking our assets at a bank or a brokerage firm and your guy telling you he's going to ride it up and down, he's got to stick with it, and paying him a percent or a percent and a half a year to do that, guys, it's an outdated model. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you security, and you truthfully can get better results on your own. If you're looking for somebody that's going to be monitoring and watching your accounts on a day-to-day basis because they're in it with you, right? It impacts their bottom line. It impacts their ability to feed their children, right? That's us. And if that interests you, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Sign up for the free booklet that we've got. You can request a portfolio interview with me over the phone. If you don't feel like calling in, you can email into us from our website or our email address that's under our contact section on the website. We can meet in person. Like I said, we can do a portfolio review. And guys, this isn't some kind of crazy sales process. It's just us sitting down saying, hey, look, here's what you're currently doing. Here's what it's made. Here's what it's cost. This is what we're doing. This is what it's made. This is what it costs. Boom, there you go. That's it. You like it, you become a client. You don't. Hopefully we leave you with more information than you got there with, and we do a better job educating you, and you leave more informed. So anyway, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back for this last segment, right before we get Brent Johnson with Santiago Goldfund on, but stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors and host of Long Term Care Radio. And Brian, we have another great question from a listener. What happens if I don't use my long-term care insurance?
You know, Dory, nobody likes to pay for something they don't use. In the past, if you never used your long-term care insurance, the premiums you paid were simply gone, just like homeowners or car insurance. But you know what? Things have changed. We now have new programs that will pay you back even if you don't use them for long-term care. You can find out about all the new programs, including ones that pay you back, at 525longtermcare.com. While you are there, you can send us your question and even sign up for a free class. And don't forget to join us every Saturday morning on Cairo for Long Term Care Radio.
Brian has two classes coming up, Friday, September 20th, and Saturday, the 21st. Seating's limited, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. Classes are free, and you'll even get a copy of Brian's book, which has a ton of great info. Go to 525longtermcare.com.
We've all heard the term buy low and sell high, and markets have recently hit another all-time high. And that begs the question, is this the top? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Is this the top? No one knows. The truth is, we no longer need to know. By using our risk-managed stock portfolios and Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we can lower your fees, increase your upside, and drastically reduce your risk exposure. This is now the longest bull market in U.S. financial history, and stock valuations have never been higher. So why risk it? Call now to get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement in place where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. And as always, and I try to... We just really need to turn into like a two-hour show. Either that or like an hour every day, something like that. It's just too much to pack in. Anyway... we're going to have to truncate this a little bit because I went long in the market update opening segment, but I want to get right into this whole focus of performance and want to throw in there a story about a client we've been working with recently. So first of all, performance is important. Okay. Performance basically is the baseline of what we've built our firm on. But the idea of performance for us is as it relates to retirement, as it relates to the long run, okay? And we know inherently that to deliver the best results over the long run, now stay with me here because I think this is so key, to deliver the best results over the long run will almost always mean that we will have short-term periods of time where we're not quote-unquote keeping up. And for a perfect example of this, and in no way am I comparing myself to this gentleman, and I've said this before on the show, but I don't think in this context before. But if you ever saw the movie The Big Short, if you haven't, I would recommend that you watch it. Don't watch it with kids in the room, though. It's got a couple. It's a great movie that everybody, if you're listening to this podcast and you find this kind of stuff interesting, do yourself a favor and watch The Big Short. Okay, there is some language. There is some inappropriate stuff. Like I said, not with the kids. That being said, it's not nearly as bad or crass as like a Wolf of Wall Street. You know, but Wall Street's not, anytime you're doing a movie on Wall Street, if it's realistic, it's not going to be a bunch of, you know, church choir members walking around, you know, praying together all the time. It's just not the reality on the ground, right? So, but one thing that is really unbelievable is everybody focuses on these hedge fund managers that made these absolute killings betting against housing. What nobody talks about is how wrong those guys looked for a good 2 years. Michael Burry, who's a brilliant investor in his own right, is one of the first guys to get on that short housing trade and made a bundle for his clients. But his fund, toward the middle or the end of 2007, or maybe it was even into 2008, was down 1.47% while the market was basically even. Okay? Now, let me just say real quick. Running a hedge fund is very different than running retirement assets. So if you've got a if you've got a scenario where the market's up, you know, 10, 12, 15% and you're down 12, 15%, that's a problem. That means that your assets aren't being, and I'm not talking about a 25 to 30% performance spread in a given year over your stock portfolio in the market. Okay, that signifies a problem. But what I am saying is that let's not get caught up in the short term. What am I up this quarter versus what am I up last quarter? All that kind of stuff. Because what are we here for? We are here to fund your retirement. And if averaging 6 or 7% a year gets you to your retirement goal, then why would we be taking on excess risk at the height of a market, 10 years into the longest bull market in U.S. history, coming up on, you know, 10 and a half? Record levels of debt on corporate balance sheets, double what we had on corporate balance sheets before the last crisis. Record valuations in stocks, bonds, and real estate. And then here's the other caveat, and I bet you haven't heard this. Do you realize, while everybody's celebrating stock market moves, do you realize that the last two quarters of this year have seen earnings or profits on the S&P decline? Two quarters in a row, that's an earnings recession. And it looks very much like that earnings recession is going to extend into the third quarter. Based on profit estimates from companies being released, it looks like it's going to be three quarters in a row. So here's my thing, and I'm actually waving my hands in the air right now. We have a yield curve inversion. We have a global slowing economy. I don't think anybody would argue that, not unless they've done the math or just even looked at the data. Okay, you got two quarters of declining earnings, and where's the market at? It's flirting with all-time highs. Do those factors that I just mentioned, do they mean the market can't go higher? No. And look, this isn't just us preaching our book. What does it mean? It means that you should certainly have a good level of risk management in your current portfolio. Right? What if markets take a 40% dive? What if, God forbid, they go down more, 50 or 60. Can you sit there and look at your portfolio with certainty and know that you're going to be just fine? And if you're like most people we talk to, you can't. You can't say that. And then maybe you can. Maybe you got to really button down like what we call a bunker-like portfolio, right? What are you paying for that? How much security do you really have? Meaning that if things went absolutely wrong, how much could that bunker-like portfolio lose? Remember, 08, 09, yeah, average bond fund was down 25% or more. Some bond funds were down as much as 50, 60%. Right? What is the safety part of your portfolio? And this is where we get into this focus on performance. And a lot of this comes from portfolio construction. Okay, so to set it up, to be clear, when we're talking about retirement, the goal is to fund the retirement. And we also know just through math that one of the easiest ways to improve long-term performance is preventing the catastrophic loss. It's just math. Go play with the numbers. Go look at it. A 20% loss on the market requires a 25% return to get back to even. A 30% loss in the market requires a 43% gain to get back to even. A 50% loss in the market requires a 100% gain to get back to even. Right? So you got to be paying attention to what the total risk exposure in your portfolio is. But it doesn't mean you have to give up upside. And I'll use this as an example. Talking with a prospective client who's going to be coming on with us, multi-million dollar portfolio. And we said, look, his performance has been really bad, paying too high in fees, all that kind of stuff. And I said, look, this is really simple. You're already rich. What you need to do is stay rich. And if you focus on staying rich and you don't take a 30, 40, 50% hit during the next down market, which is going to come, you're going to have an opportunity to deploy the capital that you've got and buy up assets for pennies on the dollar. And you'll make up for 5, 6 years of underperformance in, you know, a very short period of time. Simple. Right? But it comes down to portfolio construction. And if you're one of those wealthy people right now, and you've got a traditionally managed portfolio, if you got a portfolio over $5 million, shoot, even over $2.5 million, and you've got a traditional allocation to just stocks and bonds, you're getting sold a bill of goods, guys. A, there's a way to do it far cheaper. Use our bond replacement that's got no fees, no upfront costs, rises with the market, capturing 50 to 60% upside in the stock market, but it's guaranteed against loss. Should that be a part of your portfolio? More than likely. Why? Because it's going to be cheaper, it's going to outperform your bonds, and it's guaranteed against loss. It's going to be the safest thing you own. Should you own some stocks? Yep, they should be focused more on the value side, dividend-type paying stuff, stuff that isn't outrageously expensive. Should you have some cash in the portfolio? Yep, a little bit, because cash is yielding a lower amount. So it's in portfolio construction. So we just took this guy and showed him our model, and on an absolute risk exposure, we cut his risk exposure by half. So if the worst case scenario played out, the guy literally would lose half as much money. He's half as exposed to risk. We cut his fees in half. And over the last 8 years, again, we had to stay apples to apples, our portfolio was performing net of fees about 2.5 to 3% better per year. Now, what does that mean? 3% better per year over a 10-year period of time, guys, that equals almost a 50% difference. And we didn't do it by being smarter. We didn't do it by picking better stocks. We just did it by the structure of the portfolio. We increased that upside by getting safer and lowering fees. It's very simple. And it just frustrates me that more people aren't doing this. And it's no knock on these people. I'm not judging their intentions. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The vast majority of advisors out there and the vast majority of you listening to this show, you're invested wrong. You're invested in such a way that you're taking on way too much risk with way too little upside. And meanwhile, you're just paying too much in fees. Would you like to have more upside potential? So if we have a rocking year in the market, you actually make a good amount of money to where you're sitting there going, man, I got my money's worth in that one. Would you like to lower your fees? Would you like to pay half as much as you currently do? Would you like to have a greater level of security and the knowledge that somebody's watching over your assets on a daily basis and tacking to avoid storm clouds and preserving capital? If that interests you, which it should, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. It's not just how you invest. It's not just what you pick. It's the structure of the portfolio, guys. Looking at things in an absolute risk and absolute return model. How much total risk are we exposed to? Because the one thing the last two decades should have taught us is that if we have a portfolio that's built on the premise that A will never happen, then when A happens, we're going to get rocked. Risk management, guys, it's what it's all about. Anyway, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You can request a meeting with me. We can do a portfolio review over the phone. You can email in. We can do it over emails. Educate yourselves. There's a better way to do it. There's a cheaper and safer way to do it. You can also go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to BoertCapitalManagement.com. You can listen to our spots on Dory's show. Dory's a client of ours. I don't think I'm supposed to say that anymore. Anyway, you can hear Dory talking about us all the time. Anyway, do your due diligence. Go to BoertCapitalManagement.com. But stay tuned for the interview we got with Brent Johnson coming up. Brilliant guy. He's on Macro Voices. He's getting interviewed all over the place all the time. Brilliant guy. Great insights. And been a good friend of the show. So anyway, we've got that coming up. Don't leave. And remember, the show's going to end, but there's going to be the majority of the interview left to come. So you can go to our podcast stations or all these different podcast sites that host us. We'll offer the information up. Go to mynorthwest.com. You can go to our website, to our iTunes page. You can go to Google Know Your Risk Stitcher. Stitcher is a podcast website. That's where you can hear the remainder of the interview. Anyway, we got to run and bring on Brent. Stick with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors and host of Long Term Care Radio. And Brian, we have another great question from a listener. What happens if I don't use my long-term care insurance?
You know, Dory, nobody likes to pay for something they don't use. In the past, if you never used your long-term care insurance, the premiums you paid were simply gone, just like homeowners or car insurance. But you know what? Things have changed. We now have new programs that will pay you back even if you don't use them for long-term care. You can find out about all the new programs, including ones that pay you back, at 525longtermcare.com. While you are there, you can send us your question and even sign up for a free class. And don't forget to join us every Saturday morning on Cairo for Long Term Care Radio.
Brian has two classes coming up, Friday, September 20th, and Saturday, the 21st. Seating's limited, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. Classes are free, and you'll even get a copy of Brian's book, which has a ton of great info. Go to 525longtermcare.com.
We've all heard the term buy low and sell high, and markets have recently hit another all-time high. And that begs the question, is this the top? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Is this the top? No one knows. The truth is, we no longer need to know. By using our risk-managed stock portfolios and Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we can lower your fees, increase your upside, and drastically reduce your risk exposure. This is now the longest bull market in U.S. financial history, and stock valuations have never been higher. So why risk it? Call now to get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement in place where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And as I mentioned in the opening market segment, we are lucky enough to be joined today by a guest who's been on the show multiple times. Always great to have him back, especially when crazy stuff is going on. And he's kind of like our doctor, if you will. We give this guy a call when we can't make sense of all the craziness going on in the world. But anyway, without further ado, Brent Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today. And a lot of interesting stuff happening out there in the markets, isn't there, Brent?
Oh yeah, thanks for inviting me back. Always happy to come on and talk to you. And you know, I always say that regardless of what you want to say about this job, it's never boring. Once in a while it is, and those times are, you know, kind of interesting in and of themselves because there's not much going on. And, you know, if things are going good, it can be a little boring, but those times are very few and far between.
No.
More often, there's always something going on and you have to try to figure it out. And I'd say the last 2 weeks have been, you know, extremely interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. And for probably one of the reasons I was looking forward to this interview and thought it was really lucky timing to get you on here is just, So many, I know that you've been focused, you've talked about it on our show before, focused not singularly or not myopically, but always keeping a watchful eye on the dollar. And that's been a unique story. And then watching this recent funding problem, and I'm going to operate off the assumption that a lot of our listeners probably aren't aware of it, but there's been some very odd things, and neither you and I spoke about this off the air. We're not experts on repo markets or anything of that nature, but, you know, I guess know enough to be dangerous. But some very interesting things have been going on and in the repo markets. And for those of you that don't know, when we're talking about repo markets, we're basically talking about the interest rate that banks charge each other to loan money against other banks' assets. And we've seen a separation between that, what that costs banks or what they're paying for that, and the internal rate that the Fed pays on reserves or interest on excess reserves. Brent, did I botch that? Is that kind of go along with what you see?
No, I mean, you basically got it right. Essentially, what is happening is there's some short-term funding issues going on in the U.S. markets. So before I go into too much detail on that, let's first step back for a minute. To the point that you made, you know, at the beginning is, I keep a watchful eye on the dollar. And that's absolutely true. And for those who have heard me speak before, in the grand scheme of things, I think that all of the stuff that has happened over the last, call it 8 to 10 years, with all the global central banks is going to end very, very badly. And at the end of the show, at the end of this big grand experiment, I think gold is going to be the last man standing. I've been saying that for 10 years, and I still feel like that is the case. Where I diverge from a lot of my friends in the gold world is that I think before that happens, I think the dollar is going to make a massive move higher. And I don't have time to go into all the reasons why that is, but suffice to say, it comes down to a supply and demand issue. The supply of dollars is not big enough to meet the overwhelming demand for dollars. And so that is something I've been talking about for a long time. And that indirectly plays into what has been happening in this short-term dollar funding markets of the last few weeks. So with that as a backdrop, there is a lot of the banks own a lot of treasuries. Okay, the primary dealer banks, the big banks, their job, one of their functions as a primary dealer institution is when the treasury issues bonds, they buy the bonds from the treasury, and then they can either hold them or they can go and sell them to their clients. So that's the way the U.S. government funds itself. Okay. Now, over the last several years, call it 3, 4, 5, 6 years, the treasury, the U.S. treasury has been issuing bonds with more short dated maturities. In other words, they used to issue a lot of 10 to 30 year bonds. And in the last, I don't know, call it half a dozen years, the maturity at which they've been selling these bonds has dramatically shortened. So the most of the banks have the inventory of these treasury bonds that they have on their books are relatively short to medium term. They don't have a lot of 10 to 30 year bonds on their books. Now, this is going to get a little complicated, but stay with me here. The Treasury issues both bills, which are extremely liquid, short-term, and then, you know, bonds and stuff, which are longer, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10, 30 years. As I said, they've been doing more and more short-term. The banks have mostly on their balance sheet the bonds, which are, you know, short, medium-term, but they don't have a lot of job is to buy new treasuries when the government issues new treasuries. So in the last month, once the debt ceiling was removed, and this is something that I have talked about, is that when the debt ceiling is removed, that's actually bullish for the dollar, not bearish for the dollar. And the reason it's bullish for the dollar is when the Treasury issues debt, they are going out into the market and trading their bonds for dollars. So they're giving the bonds away and they're taking the dollars in. So when you hit the debt ceiling and you can't issue bonds anymore, that means the biggest buyer in the world is not out there buying dollars. But now that the debt ceiling was removed, they're able to go out there, issue those bonds, and buy dollars. The problem, going back to my very original thing about talking about supply and demand, the government is no longer doing QE. They're not printing dollars, and they have until just the last 6 to 9 months been raising interest rates, which has been creating a shortage of dollars in the world. So now it all kind of hits here in September when the government comes back out and starts buying dollars with their treasury bonds. And these banks who already are chock full of bonds have to go out and buy those treasury bonds. And they don't have enough cash, ready cash to do it. They have enough assets, and they can typically finance those assets by placing those assets at the Fed or, you know, with other member banks, or go to the repo market. The repo market is basically a private market. It's not the government market. You can go out to a hedge fund or a big finance asset manager or some other big banks, and they will loan you cash in order to hold onto your bonds for a short period of time. Okay?
Yeah.
So what has been happening is in that private market, not the federal funds rate, not the interest on excess reserves that the Fed will pay the banks, to give them that collateral, is that in the private market to do these short-term loans has been going higher and higher. In other words, the Fed typically controls the very short-term interest rates, but the market is pricing short-term interest rates higher than the Fed is. And as we got into this cash crunch, for lack of a better word, or dollar shortage, and people were having trouble just short-term financing, the rate at which the repo market, the private market, was pricing short-term interest rates dramatically diverged from the Fed short-term interest rates. And you saw repo rates spike, anywhere from 2 to 4 to 3 to 4%, and in some cases, 7 or 8%. Now, it's more of a short-term funding thing than it is an overall problem. But, I was talking to some people yesterday, and there was this big discussion. The people that work in the weeds of repo, they say this is not a problem. All you have to do is the Fed steps in, does very short-term repo of the repo. So that when the Fed does repo for the private market repo, it's called reverse repo. So I'm sorry that this is very confusing, but they are right. There is a very easy short-term fix for this, and that is that the Fed steps in, provides short-term liquidity, and then when the liquidity comes back, they swap it back and everything's fine. So the people deep in the weeds of repo say this isn't a problem, that's what repo is there for, it can be solved very quickly, and they're absolutely right. But it's also a little bit like jumping out of the airplane with the parachute on, and you pull the ripcord, and the parachute doesn't open. And the guy that says, well, it's a very simple problem. We just have to fix the ripcord. Well, that's true, but they're missing the overall problem that you're plummeting towards the earth, right? So, they are technically correct that fixing the ripcord can be done relatively easily. The problem is that you're falling towards the earth at terminal velocity, right?
Right.
So that's kind of what's going on. There is a very easy short-term fix, but it doesn't fix the underlying bigger problem of the dollar shortage. So I don't know if that helps or not. It may have confused it more than it helped it, but essentially that is what's going on.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the reason that guys like you or I or whoever that do this for a living, that we're paying attention to these things is because maybe there is some confirmation bias in play. But one of the reasons that I pay attention to these things is because when you see the unprecedented level of monetary experimentation done by central banks over the last decade, you're kind of looking back and watching for when those gears start to grind, right? When you start seeing a breakdown in the mechanisms that have really been driving things. And as I looked over this situation and was kind of doing my own homework, getting ready for this interview, I kept looking over this scenario and kept going back through it and reading as much as I get my hands on. And I kind of came to the conclusion, and feel free to let me know if I'm wrong, but this sort of points to me like a lack of collateral. Is that what you think is causing this? Is there a lack of good collateral out there that so many guys have been warning about for a long period of time? And then if that is the case, Brent, how in the world can there be a lack of collateral, i.e. good government bonds, which is probably the most often used asset for collateral in these lending scenarios that we're talking about? How in the world is that possible when the world is swimming in record amounts of debt?
Well, so I would say that you're not wrong. You are right. They do talk a lot about the lack of collateral, and this goes back to the fact that the Fed has been reducing the balance sheet for the last, 2 years now, three years now? I don't know the exact time frame. And, they've been reducing the reserves, right? And so as they do that, as they shrink their balance sheet, the reserves in the banking system shrink, and then therefore that leads to a lack of collateral, and that goes back to the lack of supply. I mean, here's the thing: in a debt-based monetary system, in many ways, debt equals money. So if you start deleveraging the collateral, you also start deleveraging the money supply.
Right.
And that goes back to my argument that there is a lack of dollars out there.
Due to time constraints, we've got to cut this interview short. But if you want to hear the remainder of it, which I strongly suggest, you can go to mynorthwest.com, get the Know Your Risk Radio podcast there. You can also get it off our website on our iTunes store. You can also just Google Know Your Risk Stitcher. We shouldn't be that hard to find. But anyway, you can hear the rest of this interview as well as every other interview we've ever done. And I'd also encourage you to sign up for the podcast so you get automatic updates every week of the show. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Go Dogs, go Hawks. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.